Hey, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm calling you from High Sierra.
Woo! Oh.
I hope
oh,
you can
dear.
Hear me. Can you hear me? Is this on?
The air's a bit thin up there.
Oh.
Don't pass out.
I finally did it on my main system. I just installed the GM candidate of High Sierra because I got to do that. It's coming out in a few days, and this is my production system. So that immediately it's like, can I record podcasts? Is my microphone visible? I had a couple of things where like I had to change settings and things to get things to work, but it seems to be working okay. So yay.
Well, at this point, a GM candidate seems, you know, should be pretty solid if it's coming out in like 3 days.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that it is, but that's true. It's also possible that they've done a build. The GM candidate
internally,
always was like,
sure.
Could it be? They may have done an internal build and that the final won't be the GM candidate, but who knows? Who knows? But
nobody
here
knows.
I am.
Well, Apple knows.
I'm on. So now I'm in it. I'm on iOS 11 and I'm on High Sierra.
They did not spend as much time talking about High Sierra as they have iOS for obvious reasons. This has tended to be the trend over the last few years. And High Sierra is itself sort of the TikTok, you know, maintenance type release. So I'm curious to know, I mean, obviously you probably haven't been using it super long, but I'm curious to know if there's anything that's jumped out at you so far that's different.
There's not a lot. Photos is very different. I mean, they did a bunch of changes in Photos. The fact is, and even Apple will tell you this, a lot of the changes in High Sierra are under the hood. It's a very Snow Leopard-like
right.
release,
I mean,
if we can go back to that.
APFS probably being the biggest change, but that's pretty much invisible.
Invisible. Ideally, yeah, you'd hate for it to be a disaster and be visible, right? That changing the file system on all the SSD-bearing Macs that are out there. So yeah, I'm running on APFS now on my internal flash storage on my iMac. So yeah, and there's a bunch of other stuff, you know, the stuff that they said for VR development, and there's a bunch of the core, you know, fundamentally core features that they've updated. But from an external standpoint, there, you know, it's the autoplay video blocking in Safari and
right.
photo stuff, and Photos supports the one change from when they announced it in June, for obvious reasons, is Photos supports the portrait lighting stuff that's in iOS 11 on, not just on the 10, it's on the
6 and 8 plus.
The 8 plus, not the 8,
oh, 8
the
plus, 8 plus. Not the 8, just the 8 plus.
And the 7 plus.
7 plus, oh, it's backboarded the 7 plus.
Yeah, I don't think it's on the 6S Plus, but it might be. But anyway, all of those dual camera, if you've got dual cameras and you can do depth sensing, you can do it. So on the iPhone 10, it's the front and the back. But if you've got dual cameras and depth sensing, you can do portrait mode and all the portrait lighting effects.
So,
and those are all addressable in Photos now on the Mac. Plus, by default, it's saving everything out as HEIF and HEVC files by default. More or less.
Do we have to say HEIF? Are we going to have another GIF JIF?
We have to say HEIF. That's
okay.
How they say it. It's HEIF. And there's some details there that are kind of funny that I'm going to write up in an article for Monday, probably. But there is one example. So basically, iOS 11 on the newer models, the 7 and 8, and maybe the 6S, they are recording video and pictures in a different format by default. You can switch it back to JPEG and H.264, but by default they capture in HEIF and HEVC.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that Sierra doesn't play back those formats.
Right.
So what happens? And the answer is you can not take in those formats, or they actually will, if you connect an iPhone 8, let's say, that is shooting in HEIF, and you connect it to a Mac, by default, it will, they're running Sierra, it will transcode on the fly and give you JPEGs.
Yeah, I'm just checking that now because I changed it on my 7, and I just airdropped a picture, and it came over as a JPEG.
I changed
the setting on in the camera app on iOS.
So with AirDrop, it knows what model and OS you're running, and it knows if you can receive HEIF or not, and it will send a HEIF if the OS running on the device that it's sending to can consume them, and
right.
otherwise it won't. And if it doesn't know
Smart.
Who's getting it, like a social share or something, it just goes down to JPEG.
Which is the right behavior because nothing else supports it right now.
So it seems complicated. It's complicated behind the scenes. The idea is it should just work. There are some catches. Like if you're running Photos on on Sierra, you will look at those photos in iCloud Photo Library, and it'll be like it'll be a preview, but you can't mm-hmm. edit the full high res version because it's in the wrong format. And they won't like make a proxy copy that you can edit or anything like that. It's just not editable. And although what's funny is if something I found that has not been widely reported, and I'll put it in my article, which is if every Mac associated with your iCloud account is running Sierra, if you have no Macs running High Sierra, it will sync JPEGs and H.264s up to iCloud Photo Library. Like if it knows you're not on High Sierra, it won't do that. But once one Mac associated with your account goes over to High Sierra, then it's all beef all the time. So yeah, it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild stuff. And then there's
what happens then if you have like, so, you know, let's say I don't update one of my Macs and that Mac already downloads. So like my Mini is the last Mac I usually update because it's got all the, you know, all my data on it. And that has like automatically downloading the originals from the iCloud Photo Library. So if I update my laptop to High Sierra, is that just going to start downloading HEIFs instead of JPEGs?
Yes. I actually
even
don't
though
know.
It can't read, even though it can't read them.
Well, the question is it going to download them or not? And I don't. I'm gonna look right now because my not a Mac Mini running Sierra. And it's my download repository for photos. So I should go in there and look. I would like to believe that it's downloading the HEIF file in the background and just using the proxy to say
displaying the JPEG.
But because, yeah, you'd think that it would download the original if it's set to download the originals. But I don't know that 100%. That's a good question, Dan. That's a very good question.
Thinking it through. The other thing I noticed, so earlier in this week when, I don't remember what day it was, maybe Tuesday. So there's a new version of Safari that runs on Sierra that does bring the High Sierra, certain High Sierra features with it, including autoplay blocking and reader per website and that kind of stuff.
One of the funny things that they do with Safari, and they don't talk about it a lot, is, but yeah, old versions. Safari usually goes back 2 versions, I think, of OS.
Right. Which again makes sense because you want people to have they at least need to update them for like security stuff because Safari is a very big, you know, target. Web browsers in general are big targets for malware and security. So they at least need to keep updating them to keep them current. They don't need to put in the new features as well, but in this particular case, it definitely seems like they have an agenda in terms of like trying to push these new tools out like that in the cross-site blocking for the ads, which I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's
not
a question
sure if that's in here or not.
Of what's in the OS and what's in the Safari WebKit stuff. I can now exclusively report to Secret Podcast listeners that if you've got a Mac running Sierra and you tell it to take this HEIF file from the server and export the original that it's downloaded, you know, from iCloud Photo Library, it will export a HEIF file that your computer has no idea what to do with it. And then if I drag it over to my Mac running High Sierra, there it is. There's the picture. So yeah, so it will do the right thing. It will show you a proxy, say you can't edit it, but it will have downloaded the original in the background and it's sitting on your hard drive. So that's the right thing. That's the overall story here is Apple has tried to think of every possible issue with changing the file formats and has tried to have it all just happen magically behind the scenes because that's so Apple. But I will say that's all good. I will say one thing, which is Apple could also have done an OS update for Sierra or an app update for Photos that supported mm-hmm. these formats. I would love if somebody could tell me different, but as far as I can tell, there is nothing stopping Sierra from reading these file formats, except that Apple just isn't going to bother.
Right.
And that I know that some Macs have to, the thing is hardware decoding is not available on older Macs, but software decoding is and works for these formats. So they could do it. And what's going to happen is like Acorn and Photoshop are going to get updated to support these file formats and they'll run on Sierra and it'll just be like the system and photos that won't support it. I think that's kind of dumb. I think that going back to at least Sierra and adding in playback support for those formats would have been the right thing to do, but they seem right. to have just decided not to do that because they want it's a free update. Just go ahead and
exactly.
update.
So, I mean, and it, unless I'm mistaken, it runs on everything that Sierra runs on. Or close.
I think that's right.
Did stuff get left behind this year? I hadn't looked. Usually there are lists everywhere. But I hadn't actually looked this year to see which Macs are actually compatible. All Macs introduced in mid-2010 or later. MacBook and iMac computers introduced in late 2009 are also compatible.
All right.
So I don't remember how that compares to Sierra, but I assume they've been pretty good. I mean, they've maintained compatibility for a long time for Macs. Like, they tend to... I mean, that's 7/8 years for most Macs. So chances are you've got a computer running Sierra. It will take High Sierra, so you might as well update. Though, you know, I always know there are people who get very particular about their updates. I've seen some complaints from people I know already, non or less techie people who've updated to iOS 11 and have been unhappy with certain changes that have been made, which is always a tough thing because, in general, I don't know about your experience, but these people of my acquaintance will often complain to me. So my girlfriend updated to iOS 11 and she was very upset with a couple, like, you know, little changes to how certain things worked that she thought, and she's had some stability problems too on a 6. With apps crashing a lot and things like that. So it's hard to be the support person in that case to be like, well, I don't know. I haven't had any problems of this sign. Or, yes, they changed this, but I've also been living with iOS 11 for a couple months now. So to me, those changes are just the way it is now, and I've adapted. But other people are not always as quick to adapt, or they have particular needs that I don't have. And things that, you know, they find objectionable. Like, I'm not a heavy user of the iOS podcast app, but I know people who do use it and who aren't super thrilled with some of the changes that Apple's made in the most current version.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be like, what do you tell those people? It's either like, get used to it or go get a third party app, which isn't really like a solution that necessarily makes people happy. So,
yeah, I don't know enough about it. I had somebody ask me because I wrote a thing about like podcast changes in iOS 11, but I was talking about the feed format changes. And I had somebody say to me, they tweeted at me and they're like, what about this thing that seems to be gone? It's really frustrating. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't use that app. I go in there to check and see that the fact that I put seasons and stuff in my podcast RSS feeds, that they are showing up, which they are, which is great, but I don't use that app. So I can't speak to that. I guess, you know, I know that people get frustrated. Apple has its own kind of vision about where it wants to take podcasts as an app. I think the overarching thing I would say is Apple is shooting for podcasts to be the broadest possible tool for people who are not that into podcasts to get into podcasts because it's the default. It's on the device. They're never going to please edge cases. And that sucks if you're an edge case. But the good news is
that's true for more than just podcasts.
Oh, no,
right?
It's like, true. This is their design philosophy in general. Why do third-party apps exist that replicate basic functionality of what Apple does in their apps? And the answer is because Apple's shooting for the big middle and the, you know, down, like the fact that more people use Maps than Apple, you know, Apple Maps than Google Maps shows you the power right there. Or how many people use Notes, like. Being on the device is the default, and then you have to work really hard to want something that's a third-party app. And so podcasts, that's what it's for. And I know that people use it and love it. It's the number one podcast-using app out there. But this is why changes happen that frustrate some users, is that Apple's got an idea, at least, of who that app is really for. And if you're somebody who's got some very particular needs, they may not be shooting for you. The good news is there are lots of other podcast apps. Try the other apps. They're pretty good.
Right. And here's the thing that I think is the trickiest thing to remember is that pretty much all of us are edge cases somewhere in the experience of using our phones.
Sure.
Right? Nobody uses all the phone like the same, right? You don't have giant swaths of people who all use every single feature or every single app the same. that's why we have our phones, that we can download different apps and we can set different settings and stuff like that. So we're all going to always be edge cases and run into things that we don't like. The question is always, like, where are the concentrations of those, right? Like, there's been a big conversation this week about the change in behavior for the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth buttons in Control Center, which is to say they no longer turn those features off. They simply disconnect you from whatever you're connected to currently. And there's something that I like about that, because I do end up with a lot of situations where I would be connected to, and this is exactly the problem with the Series 3 LTE watch has been having. I would get connected to a network that would not be responsive for whatever reason, and the only option was to turn the Wi-Fi off, which was fine until I came home, and then like 2 hours later was like, why is my phone not on Wi-Fi? I've been using LTE this whole time because I turned it off. So finding, I agree that maybe there's a better option for finding a middle ground between that, or allowing you to both disconnect or turn it off, or to have a preference for that or something, because I think people do use those both ways. But again, Apple is going to make its decision about what it thinks is more useful, and it's decided it wants to leave Wi-Fi, make it harder to turn Wi-Fi off, in part because it doesn't want you to disable all the things that you can do with Wi-Fi on, right, like AirDrop, etc.
Here's a thought. If they really wanted to make this work better, they would take that Control Center feature and also allow you to pick a Wi-Fi hotspot from the UI.
Yeah.
But they don't.
This has fundamentally come down to an issue that I have, and I wrote a little bit about in my Macworld column this week, where there are things that they've clearly shown that they're ready to throw over long-running conventions if they feel like they can do it better, like the home button, the headphone jack, etc., right? Like, Apple's not shy about throwing out stuff it thinks is old and doesn't work anymore in the way that it wants it to, or that it can trade off for something it thinks is better. And 3D Touch is, I think, one of those weird areas where I don't think it's ever turned into what they wanted it to be. They tried to like sprinkle it all throughout the operating system on iOS, and I think it's been a very mixed bag. I think there are places where it works well, and there are places where I always forget that it's there.
Yeah.
And that's before you even get into macOS, where I think I turned it off and have never missed it. I feel like there's a big possibility for it to be sort of a contextual menu style, like right click interface, and it's missing out on some of those opportunities. And in particular, one of the things I was pointing out was the menu that comes up that has copy and paste in it, which has been around for, you know, years and years now. And that menu has become so cumbersome and overloaded, right? If you ever open up an app where it has the little arrow at the end of that menu, because there are so many options in the contextual menu that you have to scroll through a couple pages of it. Or my personal favorite is, if you've ever done the formatting text where it groups bold, italic, underline into one item and then pops up a sub menu that just replaces the original menu with the like next option. That's broken. I mean, it could be improved. And I think 3D Touch using for that kind of thing makes a lot of sense, because if you press and hold on some text, then there's an option to bring up more, you know, in-depth options, and I think that it allows a lot more flexibility. And there are some really good implementations of this in iOS. For example, I really like it in the music app, where I can press harder on a song and then select like play this next in my queue and let go, all with like basically just holding down and swiping my thumb, like a contextual menu. And it works great there. That is a really nice interface, and it makes sense. And you can accomplish all of those through other means. It's just a shortcut. But when it comes to things like, I maybe lamented this before or someplace else, but Peek and Pop, I think this whole idea that they built the 3D Touch idea around, I think in most cases, to me, that strikes me as something that is not necessary. And in some cases, doesn't work very well at all. In particular, anytime you say Peek and Pop on a URL where it has to go and load something from the web,
you're
going to be holding it and waiting for the page load, at which point it was probably just faster for you to tap the link in the first place. So I think that needs a rethink. And I think they're going to build those sensors in, right? They've been in every single phone since the 6S.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're going to invest in that technology, rethink what you're doing with it, because it could be way more useful than what you're using it for now.
It looks to me in iOS 11 like they've really decided that 3D Touch is tap and hold, and That's like it. Like on the iPad, if you tap and hold on a control center item, it pops open. On the iPhone, you can't tap and hold. You 3D touch, and it does the same thing. And I like that interaction. That's what that's. I have started to use 3D touch more on my iPhone now because of control center. I did want to say one thing about the Wi-Fi thing. One thing I like about what they did with the Wi-Fi and the control center is it really is very convenient in saying I need to be off this Wi-Fi now and then to go back on it. Because if you tap it, you disconnect from your local Wi-Fi. Tap it again, and it reconnects to your local Wi-Fi. And sometimes you have that issue of like, why is this, you know, something's not loading or something, and you just want to get off and on, and it doesn't turn off all your Wi-Fi, because that has effects for syncing with Apple Watch and for other handoff things and stuff like that. But it does reconnect, which is nice. I love Control Center, by the way. That was, I wrote an article about it this week for Macworld, but I think Control Center in iOS 11 is amazing. I think it takes some getting used to, and I remember being in that place when I first installed iOS 11 earlier, so I'm trying to relay that to people who are now using it for the first time. But I love it. I love that it's customizable. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually in the beta, they did some adjustments to it that make it more functional. The fact that the music little blob, music box, has play, pause, next, and previous on it that are tappable. And that if you tap in the upper right-hand corner, it immediately takes you to, there's a little like speaker icon up there. It immediately takes you to choose your audio output. Or you can tap and hold and get the full player control. It's like, I think they did a really good job. I think it's more dense, yes, but I think the three-page control center was a bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
People
yeah.
are totally confused about, like, what? Wait, why is it showing audio controls? I want to turn on the flashlight. It's like, well, you got to change to another page. There's another page? Yes, there is. But this is just, like, it's all there. And then it's so clever. Like, I like the sliders for the brightness and volume. And if you tap on the flashlight and hold, you actually get a slider the brightness of that. It's just like, this is going to be good.
There are little things in there I like, too. For example, if you do the 3D touch on the whole like network section, right? It tells me what Wi-Fi network I'm connected to, which I actually really like, because sometimes my phone connects to the wrong Wi-Fi network. That's a separate issue which needs to be fixed as well. But at least I can quickly check that without having to go into settings and dig around to figure out what I'm looking at. Same thing for Bluetooth.
Turn on personal hotspot right from there too, right?
Yeah, which is also nice. Yeah. So I mean, I agree with you. I think the new control center is one of the best features in iOS 11, and if you're using like the stock loadout, you're really only scratching the surface of what it can do, because the fact that you can customize it and that you have 3D touch actions related to almost all those buttons means there's a lot more power in there that may not be obvious the first time you try to use it.
The timer, I will commend to you the timer.
Yes.
As somebody who uses timers, so you tap and hold or 3D touch on an iPhone that does 3D touch, and it will, if you tap on it, it'll just open the timer in the clock app. But if you tap and hold or 3D touch, you get a slider, and you just slide how many minutes and press start. And that's it. Yeah. It's so much better.
And again, you can do that all without like, well, except for the tapping start part. But if you like tap and hold, you can already just start swiping your thumb while you're still holding to adjust the timer too. Like, I like that sort of fluidity with 3D touch, like that you can tap and hold on these things and make interactions by like selecting something and releasing your thumb. You know, I do this with my with various like things in there, the brightness, for example, and the volume. You can pop those open and do stuff. I mean, I love the ability to have low power mode in the control center, because that's super. I mean, that was so hard to find before. Yeah. A lot of people didn't know it existed. And I, you know, would be pointing that out to them, like when they complain their phone runs out of battery sometimes. I was like, oh, you know, you can switch on this low power mode. And it's like, where is that? They have to ask again every time because it's buried in the settings.
There's a bunch of accessibility features are floated in Control Center. You can add them as Control Center items. And I will recommend to people who are getting up there in age and their near vision is fleeing, that there's one of them is called the magnifier, and you can put it on the control center. And what the magnifier is when you tap on it, and this features have been in iOS for a while now, but it's been an accessibility setting that's hard to find. But you can put it on control center, and the magnifier is basically a camera window that doesn't take a picture. But what it lets you do is it lets you zoom in very quickly to something that's very small that you're trying to read, let's say, and then you tap the shutter button, and what it does is it freezes it, and then you can look and then zoom in even further if you need to and read the text. So like if you're trying to read something that's unreadable because it's too small, the magnifier is and it doesn't take a picture. It just uses your camera to blow up something that you're trying to look at. And that is a fun feature that is now you can just put that on Control Center if you want. and then it just sits there. You don't have to dig for it. And Control Center, I mean, there's like 18 different things that can be put there. It's kind of, it can get out of hand, but you know, you just curate it and it lays it out for you. You don't have to drag things around. You just say these go in and these go out, and then that's it. It's awesome.
Yeah, there is a lot to like. I've been a little frustrated with some of the stuff in iOS 11 that is dependent on third-party integration.
Oh,
like, for example,
files.
Let's talk about files.
It makes me so mad that here we are. And again, I know it's hard to develop apps, right? But they've had since June. It's 5 days into iOS 11. I have yet to see any of the major cloud services release an app update that supports files. It's
so and I swear I saw a Dropbox update at one point that said like that boasted about iOS 11, and I went back and looked through the version history. I could not find it again.
Their iOS 11 release was because they had a bug. Like Dropbox stopped working in iOS 11, and they fixed it so it works, but it doesn't do. And they didn't. Dropbox never really fully supported the open and save format on iOS anyway. But they were on stage at WWDC as a partner, as basically like they're going to do it. So I get it. I'm impatient. I can wait for Google Drive and OneDrive and Dropbox to get this in. But let me tell you, files is great. And the only thing that I don't love about it is that I'm dragging all these files into iCloud Drive, which I've got. It works. It's fine. But I rely on Dropbox for so much. And it will be so great when I can do the same, if this happens, with my Dropbox data. Because there was that moment, it was yesterday. I posted about this in one of our many Slacks that we're in together. Yesterday, I got a file. I'm working on a story for Monday that's under embargo, and they sent me some sample photos of the thing that I'm writing about. And I'm on my iPad. I'm writing out in the backyard on my iPad. And these photos are attached in an email. And I went, oh, I flipped open files as in Slideover and just literally just dragged and dropped the attachments into iCloud Drive. Done. Mm-hmm. Done. I was like, that's so awesome. But it relies like drag and drop, although the drag and drop, lots of apps have been updated to support drag and drop, and it's awesome. Yep. And I'm very happy about it. So that's a good news story. The bad news is files, where obviously it's hard because otherwise they would have all done it on day one. But the payoff there is going to be so much greater for anybody who's using any of those. I also would like there to be a files compatible app that supports like network file shares, like SMB or something like that, because I'd like to be able to mount my server.
There is a macOS server option in there, but I don't know what it does. I have it in my sidebar, but it doesn't. It literally shows. I may be gone now too, but it was definitely there in the beta, and I would tap on it, and like nothing would happen. And it's like, oh, they're clearly set up something. Maybe High Sierra server has some feature that you can share files, which is great.
On Sierra server, there's a way to share files, and I haven't figured it out either, so I haven't gotten that to work, but it may be there. We probably have a listener who's going to be like, oh yeah, guys, this is what it is. But
I think there's something coming in High Sierra server, so but yeah, that would be great. That'd
it's so
be great.
Close.
It's, I mean, it's so much, after years and years of saying we're not going to do a file system on iOS, essentially, you know, basically over the last couple of years, they have walked that back. And that is really good because it turns out that, you know, 10 years later, we're still all working with files all of the time.
Yeah, not everybody
does. I understand your ambition in trying to get rid of it, but most people encounter them in some form or another. And having that at least there as that, you know, safety net of saying like, oh, you got to deal with files. We got an app for that. You don't want to worry about files. Don't worry about it. You know, like that's great.
Yep. And it is that and drag and drop put together. Like, it's going to take some getting used to, but like iOS 11 on an iPad is really great. And we just need some more third party support, and it's coming. You know, I appreciate how hard it is for developers to adopt this stuff and on the right cycle. And they're not all going to be there on day one. But I will say that I switched my writing apps because one of my two, so I have two different sort of like text editor, markdown editors that I use, and one of them updated to support drag and drop and the other one didn't. And so I'm like, all right, well, I'm back to that. I'm back to OneWriter now.
Job done.
Because I can drag things out of Safari and drop them in, and it just works, which is pretty great. Actually, I used it as an example in my Macworld story because one of the things about drag and drop is that it's smart. Apps are intelligent. They're intelligent in what they put in the dragged area. They can put like different things, different representations for different apps, and then they can accept like certain kinds of files and not others. So if I drag an image out of Safari, let's say, or out of files into OneWriter, a text editor, and drop it, what do you think happens?
Oh, does it? I mean, is it just, if it's a rich text editor, it should just like it's paste
not,
it in there?
It's not. It's a text editor. But it's a markdown editor.
Does it create a link to it? Like, does it create a markdown tag?
It creates the markdown image tag and saves the image that got dragged on it in the folder that your text file is in. So if you preview it, it previews properly. And that's cool. I thought it would be like alt text or the file name or the URL. It's like, nope. That developer is like, I can take images and here's what I'm going to do. It's like, you're in this folder. I'm going to save it in there with this file name. I'm going to put it here with the markdown text. And if you preview it, it just shows up. It's like, that's not actually what I think I would want out of that workflow, but it's the right thing to do. And it shows you the richness of apps can handle this stuff. And so it's, again, it's drag and drop. The Mac has had this for a long time. I would actually argue that drag and drop, though, is more impressive on iOS because you have these walled off apps and no file system, except now we have that too. Like it is harder to get things from place to place.
Yes.
And it's all really tactile too, where you can be using two different fingers to drag.
Yeah,
you can literally take a drag and swipe it over to another finger and like pass it off to your other finger. It totally works. It's bizarre.
It's one of those things that I played around a bit with in the beta, but I just like, I haven't yet been able to make it part of my workflow, in part because apps, you know, we're still updating, take advantage of it. But reading through some of the reviews, and somebody, probably Federico, pointed out like you can grab stuff from places like Safari, like off your reading list. And I was like, huh. And so I like went into reading list and I like did the like multiple tap select on a bunch of like recipes I had in there and then dragged them into notes, and it just like put in like the nice preview links and everything like that. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, you know, it seems kind of, it's one of those things that it's Apple at Apple's best, where they take something that is technically difficult and they make it look just so simple in the way it works, right? There's no complicated interface or anything to that. It's all just very intuitive, and you don't even think about all those gymnastics that have to be done to get it between two sandbox apps, because that doesn't matter to you. It just works. And it's been a while, I feel like, since I've had an Apple feature that I feel just works in like the truest Apple fashion. There's a lot of the seamless features that they have promised that occasionally don't work, like the copying and pasting stuff between the Mac and iOS. Like, when it works, it is perfectly transparent. When it doesn't work, you have no idea what the hell has gone wrong because there are no settings. But so far, drag and drop, as far as I can tell, seems pretty darn robust. Like, I have not run into any problems where inexplicable things happen and I just am left with an inability to troubleshoot it. In every case I've tried it, it has worked flawlessly. So good on them.
Yeah. See, there's good stuff. And there's new phones. You're holding out for an iPhone 10, right?
Yeah, I just felt like it's the significant upgrade this year.
Yep.
And if I'm going to write about iPhone stuff, that having a 10 at my disposal is nice and handy. And, you know, heck, I just want one. I just want an iPhone 10. I think it looks cool. I'm excited about the screen and the new camera update. Speaking as someone who has had always I had the 7 and the 6 and the 6S, I've never gone to the plus size. I find it too large, but I am a little jealous of the cameras.
Yeah.
And so having that in a package that is much closer to the size of a, 7 is very attractive to me, especially with a larger screen than is on the Plus. To me, that is a upgrade worth giving my money for. My biggest concern now, and there's been some talk this morning about perhaps the demand on the 8s being less than in previous years.
Certainly.
Because people are waiting for the 10, and as we all know, they're not going to make as many of those as they are. So a lot of people aren't going to be getting their iPhones probably for a while. So now I'm concerned, like, I'm going to be jumping on at like 3 a.m.
Yep.
In a month or so. And it's going to be a crapshoot as to whether or not I'm actually getting a phone.
Yeah, get the Apple app for sure.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
That's
I've done that.
Do it. And then
I'm super worried because as an upgrade program member, I'm curious to see how they are handling that. Because in theory, this year you can upgrade and have it delivered. So, which I think I predicted last year, because every year they've gotten better with the upgrade program. And this year it seems like they're finally ready to do home delivery, and they send you a box and you throw your old iPhone in the box and send it back, which makes perfect sense. Plenty of places do this. But, you know, there's always kinks. There's always kinks to be worked out. And so I'm a little worried that with a combination of factors, it's just going to end up being very high stress and maybe disastrous. All especially right. when you're trying to navigate that at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know,
it's not a recipe for success. I bought 8 Apple Watches instead. Oh, no. What was I thinking? Yeah. all right. Yeah. I have to run. Hey, listeners, I've got to go. I've got to go. So, but I will say one thing about I've got the 8 and the 8 Plus here, review units, and I'm going to look at them. And the camera, I was like, maybe I'll do the 8 Plus until the 10 comes out. Maybe I'll play with the 8 Plus and live with it. And the thing is, I use my iPhone in my hand, like one-handed, so much. And I picked it up and I was like moving around with my thumb and stuff. I'm like, no, I can't. It's just way too big. It's just way too big for me. So I love you if you're somebody who uses this big phone. That's great. I have tried, and once again, it's just like I can't do it. It just doesn't fit with how I use my phone. So, but I will play with them and take lots of pictures and stuff like that and write about it at Six Colors. So next week, you can check that out. All right, Dan. It was nice chatting with you. Sorry, I have to run, but our car had a flat tire. Hey, it's a little personal story here to end it. And it just went flat overnight, which is nice, not to do it like on the road. But and we used it as a training moment for my daughter to learn how to change a flat tire.
Oh, that's good. That's a valuable skill.
But now I got to go get the car. So.
All right.
All right. Thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. And we'll be back next time to talk about more stuff, I'm sure. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.